Hello, my late night investigators. This is the all-seeing eye of the Panopticon, and this is Tales from the Panopticon. And we're here with a different kind of episode. Today we're going a little off script. We're going to be doing a little more freeform, talking about inspiration. I recently just had a discussion with Jake over at Monsters and Munchkins, and they're a really great channel. I would highly suggest checking them out. I'll put a link in the description. They do a lot of live plays of currently Rime of the Frost Maiden and I want to say Call of Cthulhu, as well as some battle reports for Warhammer 40K. I believe Warhammer Fantasy, and a Lovecraftian tabletop game called Mythos. Beautiful artwork that they've got going on in terms of the models, and it really just some great content from these guys. And I had a chance to sit down with Jake, and we were talking about what inspires us to write games. And for me, it really depends on what I'm writing. I tend to get my inspiration out of music, instead of things that I've seen. So if I'm writing, if I'm writing something in fantasy, like a duel scene between two combatants, I will probably choose something more like Michael Salvatore, where it's the deep voices and the Gregorian chant stuff. Or if I'm doing massive battle scenes, I write using Hans Zimmer. A lot of, like, Gladiator was such an amazing soundtrack. It's one of my favorite soundtracks to write to. Or, Crimson Tide is another good one. But it really kind of depends on what it is that you're writing. And for me, recently, it has been a lot of jazz, as I've been writing Breaking Neon for the City of Mist system. And if you're not familiar with City of Mist, City of Mist is quite an excellent game by the Son of Oak, Son of Oak Games. These guys have produced quite possibly one of the best games I've ever played in my life. It's super simple to play. Doesn't require a whole lot in terms of understanding, because it really leaves the game up for a narrative, and the narrative is what drives the game, not the combat. There's no health bar system, there isn't whose turn is it, it's who can do what when, and it's how you describe everything going on. And it is my job as the Master of Ceremonies, the MC, to determine which role you get. So it really is a fun system, and it's set in a modern noir setting, so neo-noir, and that's just the book. And the premise of the game is that you are in a city with people who, just normal people, who now have extraordinary powers. You can check out one of my earlier podcasts on City of Mist for more details about it. But I created this Breaking Neon game with a neon noir theme. So it's modern day, but it's set with a almost sort of an 80s feel. And in some parts, there is actually like traditional black and white noir, like the traditional noir feel of it, with some smooth contemporary jazz and stuff like that. Or not contemporary, just like some smooth jazz, soulful. And writing this game, I was bouncing around between everything from postmodern jukebox to Yoko Kanno and the Seatbelts, and That was just for the first half of the game. And the second half, I was doing stuff like, what is the name of those guys? It's blanking on me, I do apologize, folks. the guys that did Tron Legacy. Anyways, It will come to me later. Daft Punk, there we go. Yeah, I don't know. It's still early in the morning for me. Anyways, I had been listening to a lot of Daft Punk, a lot of 80s music, with the synth sounds, and really trying to get a feel, get that feel of the 80s and 90s neon, into like inbred into this game, because it's called Breaking Neon. It's all about this neon city where everything is just weird and strange and colorful yet dark. And so I've been power jamming lots of this music, and the more I listen to it, the more the scene sets itself. I really haven't taken a whole lot of inspiration for the setting outside of just going, well, nightclub scene. I think Miami nightclub scene is pretty vibrant. It's on the coast. There is lots of lights, and I ran with that, and with this combination of jazz and synth, I created this world for my players to be in. And so far, my table one, who are now called the Unlucky Few, these guys have caused quite a bit of mayhem, inadvertently. As per their namesake, these guys are really getting into the meat of the game, and even some of the players are getting more and more into the music to get the feel of it, so that they are more inspired. As well as one of the other things that I've done is I've created like almost like theatrical posters for each of the sessions, in order to keep the sort of theme going. And it really kind of does inspire someone to look at this upcoming game differently. Like, oh, this is what we're going to be doing. This is possibly what we're dealing with. And I know that at least one of the players has been like using these theatrical posters and the music around it to really get into the character. And that in the interactions with all the characters, especially with when there's music involved or specific NPCs involved, they really get into it. And the story has been amazing because of it. And when you let the players take hold of the story and run, and you've given them that inspiration, it really tells, I mean, it really frees you up as a game master. Not because you're not having to tell the story, but because there's less work for you to have to drive the story. The players are being interactive, everybody is engaging, and nobody is, it feels left out because everybody is trying to do this together. On the opposite side of that, there are other things that you can do to inspire your games. Obviously, reading, watching things on, oh, excuse me. Watching things on YouTube, watching movies, stuff like that. Those scenes can really help you set up where you want to go. And I mean, everybody has done that at least once in their writing career. For me, it was a big battle scene that I created for my personal D&D game, called Battle of Alumbrazia. And it really, you can gain inspiration anywhere. It's not just limited to music. It's not limited to literature, TV, video games, gaming in general, written lore. You can look outside and see how like a rabbit interacts with its snow-covered environment, and that can spark something in you that creates a scene, and you just have to run with it. That's really the only, that looking around in an organic environment to create something new, that is kind of what I feel a writer should strive for. I know that is what I strive for, is finding new things to write about. Sorry, like I said, this is more of a free form. I wanted to try something different. I also like, I can, I guess I can talk a little bit more about the Breaking Neon game. The Unlucky Few have, they originally started out as a group of people, and they still don't quite have a connection to each other aside from this one person by the name of Tabitha Creed. She is a doctor at the hospital in this game. And this doctor is the rift or the embodiment of Chiron. And so she had hired them to and do a little investigating because she had noticed that there were quite a few strange deaths going around the city. People who were dying from strange diseases, or sorry, not strange disease. They were coming in with missing organs or completely just devastated internal hemorrhaging. And there was no reason for it. There were no incision marks. There were no physical traumas. They were just gone. And there were also a number of disappearances across town that were needing to be investigated, but that was less important. And so our plucky group had decided that they were going to go and take a look upon request because they all knew Tabitha. They were good friends. We have Derek Wilder, who is a professor of psychology. No, not psychology. Philosophy, there we go. He's a professor of philosophy and was one of Tabitha's teachers at the university. We have Lars, who is also another professor, who's pretty down on his luck. And he really got the short end of the stick, or he got the shaft on this one. But he is trying. And is also one of Tabitha's favorite teachers, despite the fact that he ended up homeless at one point. And she tried to help him. And then there is Michael Brownie, who is a thief. And he comes into play because he tried to steal something from Tabitha and got caught. And so she made him owe her one. And so these three went to investigate this strange drug that has been found called Stim. And their investigation led them to a place called Xertha, which is a Russian bar towards the end of the Neon Strip. It's in this old abandoned, I guess not abandoned anymore, but it's this old warehouse that goes underground on the Neon Strip. And as they get around there, the Lars, or Don Quixote, he is really not a face of the group. He's got his spectral armor and lance. He's really the shield of the group. And he ended up accidentally befriending a mob boss, and his daughter by the name of Ivan and Pietra. Which was fine and dandy. He was terrified of it, but it really made for a good story. Derek, on the other hand, ended up getting puked on and almost started a big old fight with some of the local security in the bar. and almost became a legend among the bar drinkers as he started drinking with them after this whole scenario. Michael, on the other hand, decided that he was going to go and pickpocket people and really just kind of fill his own coffers, and which is good. He really did play well into the investigation by sneaking around and doing everything like that. And eventually it led them to going further into the Neon Strip, where they came across a club called the 404. And the 404 is this beautiful Space Needle-like building. It's got a $100 cover charge, and it is immaculate. It's just shining chrome and glass, and it is a beacon of modernity. And these guys really had, they just stuck out like a sore thumb. But they ended up coming across a guy by the name of Hector, who eventually ended up getting them connected with the owner of the club, named Ms. Crane. And Ms. Crane was willing to offer them money in order to take this fake drug that they've discovered off the streets by finding whoever was manufacturing them. And this led them to a unlikely pair of people by the name of Mads Harrington and Harry Ides. These guys are the Rifts of the Mad Hatter and the March Hare, and they own the Mad Tea Room. And so these guys, they ended up going into the Mad Tea Room, which is where this whole thing started. They came up, the building is full. Obviously, Harry Ides is tweaking. He looks like he's jonesing for some drugs. Mads Harrington is just so happy that he's got people there. And Mr. Wilder, Professor Wilder, I should say, Professor Wilder had decided that he was going to try and get them to just open fire on themselves instead of one of them having to kill them. And sure enough, he convinced them to go into the back office to get some drugs. When he sort of revealed his intentions of, I'm here to stop you guys from selling bad drugs, they tried to kill him. Well, turns out that Professor Wilder is the portrait of Dorian Gray. So his pseudo immortality is linked to a cell phone that he carries. And as soon as they shot him in the head, he pulled out his phone, took a picture, and was instantly healed and said, yeah, let's not do that again. And he unleashed his power in a way that he never had before, in which he stirred up this fervor between the two of them that opened up a whole new world of danger, as the two owners immediately drew guns and started opening fire between the two of them. Derek was hit and unfortunately needed some medical attention because of how the system works. He had burned his immortality in order to do this, but he did end up getting the two killed, and it worked out in their favor. And that was the end of the session. It was Michael healing Professor Wilder, or at least trying to keep him alive long enough to be able to make it out of there. And it really, that was the first session. These guys did such an amazing job of tracking down the clues, looking around, seeing what was going on, but most importantly, the role playing. And we just finished last night's session, The Two Brothers, and we're gonna have to do a part two of it, but I feel like my players are invested in this game, and that's what I look forward to as a GM. I want to make sure that my players are not just playing the game, but they're enjoying it, they're living it, and that it's entertaining. And that's my goal, as the all-seeing eye for my GM for hire services is that I'm not just running a game, I'm entertaining. So I'm getting a little long-winded. Obviously, this is a little too free-form, even for me, but I feel like it was a good conversation. Maybe next time I'll have a better script. Anyways, I'd like to give a shout-out to my brother Thomas, who's been an avid listener, and he wants to give a shout-out to the rest of the world by saying hi. And you, my late-night investigators, have a good night. And remember, we are always watching.